There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.
The Bookshelf. What you should be reading.
Our lovely guests tell us what we should be reading and all about the author. Welcome to Tagra Chandab. You've been a moderator at the Emirates Airline Festival of Literature. Welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yes, I've been very fortunate to be a moderator and a host for, I think, about 5 years now.
We can't get rid of you.
No, you can't. I mean, how many kids have I had? And I'm still coming back. I love being a part of it, and it's such a wonderful experience. Look, today's book is called The Girl Who Smiled Beads, and it's a story of war and what comes after by Clementine Wamaria. And anyone who is familiar with genocide, anyone who is familiar with Rwanda and followed the stories during the 90s of what was going on in Africa will probably want to sit down and read this book. But I do suggest that if you do it, don't do it the way I did and sit in a cafe and cry, because all I could do was, you know, reach for the napkin and just wipe away my tears, because it's such a tragic but heroic story of a young girl and her sister. So at 6 years old, they set out on foot. After the militia uprising in Rwanda, and they crossed through six to eight countries through Africa before they arrive in the United States as refugees. But what they have to overcome and endure is incredibly remarkable, and it's a story about strength.
You mentioned the word heroic, and I'm glad you did that, because when you tell people that this is a story about war and what comes after, you have a certain image in your head of what you're going to read. But it's written in such a way and from such an inspiring and unbelievably heroic perspective, you can't begin to understand how she has managed to survive this and how she's telling us this story today. She's just a phenomenal human being.
Absolutely, and I think in so many of her interviews, she says that what she really wanted to do was inspire people to work together, to inspire a young generation to look at each other, so that if you are walking down the street and you see someone who is homeless, make eye contact. Because for so long in her life, when she went in and out of refugee camps, because she was displaced, nobody would acknowledge her. And that's what she is trying to say in through this story, is that, you know, it's a story about hope. It's about inspiration. It's about uplifting people and asking people to reconnect with humanity.
How is the book structured?
It sort of dips in and out between her current life in the United States and then back into what she was going through in Africa. Beautifully written, co-written by Elizabeth Will, and of her childhood, growing up in an affluent, Rwandan family, where she had nannies and her father had a wonderful job. Her mother worked within the local church, and to have that all stripped from you, and it highlights how it can really happen to anybody.
Yeah.
We just have to look over, at Syria. And see, a very, very similar situation.
The Bookshelf, what you should be reading.
And the book that we've pulled off the bookshelf today is a memoir. It is The Girl Who Smiled Beads by Clementine Wamaria, co-written also by Elizabeth Vile. I'm not sure how to pronounce her last name. We've got Tagra Chandab, our guest reviewer, in the studio with us today, who is really moved by the book, and she's telling us all about it.
It is not an easy read at all, and it's very difficult to imagine what Clementine and her older sister Claire must have
endured,
built around themselves to protect themselves and to survive every single day. They showed no physical affection for each other, because actually that wasn't necessary in survival. And she has built sort of a stainless steel case around her, Clementine, to protect herself from having to feel or show any emotion. And she's also got this, for me, burning rage with inside her. As to, you know, people are kind to her and give her things and look after her, and she just can't stand it. And it's the most difficult sort of thing to get inside her skin, but she does do it incredibly well. And she feels that they are, you know, feeling sorry for her, and how could they begin to imagine what she'd been through.
Talking about that sort of stainless steel wall that you referred to, there's a moment in the book where, you know, when she's in America and she's in high school, and she's this wonderful actress, and because she's able to emulate certain characters, and she has to present to her drama teachers, and her teachers were continually saying to her, no, we want something more authentic, we want you. And she sits down and she picks up the phone and she calls her brother-in-law Rob, who is married to her sister Claire, and she doesn't get through, and she leaves a message, and she's screaming down the phone. And it's the first time in the book where you see the rage, where she tells him, you let us down. You promised to protect us, because that's the promise he made before he married her sister. And for the first time, her teachers and her peers see the real Clementine. And it's heartbreaking, but also at the same time, you feel like finally she's letting go. She's opening up. She's allowing people to come in. And, you know, during the early years of her refugee status in the United States, people just didn't know how to talk to her about the situation. And she recalls a moment where Hotel Rwanda was released, and then finally, you know, students around her ask her about the genocide, about seeing dead people around. Did she? They were asking those really vivid questions, and she would say, how dare they? How dare they ask me these?
There was one line I remember. It was, my life is not a movie.
Yes. Yes, so absolutely.
She felt
yeah.
that she was on this sort of, you know, she had to act out what they would perceive a refugee should be like, and so they could all feel sympathy and they could all give her things. And she was raging against that. And it was a very perceptive. I mean, she's obviously a highly intelligent young person who's gone on to do great things, but there was so much damage within her that a six-year-old would have to lose everything. And lose, it's not even the physical things, it's just the fact that to survive, there was no way. But, you know, every single moment it would be about survival. How do you protect yourself? And to put a six-year-old through that, you know, and millions of six-year-olds, this was the thing, you know, she was just one, and she's and there would be people even worse off than her if it was possible.
Have a listen to her speak for herself about what the book is about, and have a listen.
Hi, I am Clementina Wamaria. I am the co-author of The Girl Who Smiled Beads. It's a story, my story, about war and what comes after. At one level, the book is about fleeing my home country, Rwanda, with my older sister during the mass killing of 1994, living in and out of refugee camps in seven African countries and coming to the United States and creating a life here.
So there you go. That was Clementine Wamaria talking about the book, The Girl Who Smiled Beads. Now, that's a question that you had, Isabel, and I did too. The title itself, as you're reading, it's a while before it becomes clear where the title comes from. Would you mind taking us through that? So it's from Clementine's Nani Mukamana. It's a story. How is that story connected to the themes in the book? Do you remember the story that's told about the girl who smiled beads?
Well, I mean, to be quite honest with you, there was just so many stories that came out through her nanny, but it was the constant tales that she would tell her to keep her happy and to inspire her and to be hopeful, and I think that's where that connection came from.
There was a big theme of happiness in that story. I remember when Mukamana was telling her these stories, and they helped get her through. And she was heartbroken when she suddenly disappeared, wasn't she?
Absolutely. And she couldn't reconnect. She couldn't connect with any of the other nannies that came later. I think overall this story and what Clementine says in general is that it's hope, it's investing in others, it's resilience. In a war, people still love, they care, and they invest in each other. And I think that really comes out in some of the stories that she tells, in the refugee camps. But I want to go back to the beginning of her story of appearing on the Oprah show. And being a part of a group of young people who win an essay writing competition, and I recall her saying that Oprah was talking about all the other essays, and she just sat there wondering why she had been forgotten, and then Oprah turns to her and talks to her about her particular story.
We actually have that to listen to. So if you haven't seen that moment already, it's how the book opens. She's telling us a story of what it was like appearing on the Oprah show all those years ago. Have a listen to this.
So Clementine, before you left Africa, did you ever find your parents?
No, actually. We just found out in 2001, since 1994, that our parents were alive, which was a miracle, which was we searched, we tried Red Cross, we tried, UNICEF, we tried everywhere. My sister and I, we moved everywhere, every day, walking around, it's like searching and searching and searching.
So when was the last time you saw them?
Well, it was 1994 when I had no idea what was going on. So until 2001, when we met a person who told us that they were alive, and we couldn't believe it
that they had survived.
Yes.
And you had now is it true that you have a brother and sister?
Yes, I have two new siblings that I haven't met yet because it's been now 12 years since we've been seeing each other.
Well, I have a letter from your parents. I have a letter from your parents. Clementine and Claire, come on up here. Claire is Clementine's sister. Hi. Hi, Oprah. Nice to see you, Claire. This is from your family in Rwanda, your father and your mother and your sisters and your brother, and I wanted you to read it. Okay? Well, you don't have to read it right now in front of all these people.
She doesn't know what's in that letter, and why would my parents have a letter and I'm on the Oprah show and they're handing me this letter. So the relief, you can see the relief on her face when she realizes when I say you don't have to read it here in front of everybody.
You don't have to read it right now in front of all these people because your family is here. We have flown your family here.
So yeah, that was the appearance, which is what the book begins with. So Clementine is talking about the experience at the very start of The Girl Who Smiled Bees, which is the book that we're talking about. And I don't know about the rest of you, but when I read that, and then when I went back and because I immediately wanted to see the moment itself, I cringed.
I did as well.
There's a bit I wanted to just really quickly read out. So there's one part where she's describing it. So when they finally see their parents come on stage, the cameras were so far away that I forgot I was participating in a million viewer spectacle, that my experience, my joy and pain were being consumed by the masses, though I was aware enough to realize that everybody in the audience was crying. And then she says, I felt gratitude. Yes, Oprah had brought my parents to me, but I also felt kicked in the stomach as though my life was some psychologist's perverse experiment. Let's see how far we can take a person down, and then how far we can raise her up, and then let's see what happens.
Exactly. It's this kind of voyeurism, isn't it? Where here is a very fragile, damaged human being, her and her sister Claire, what they've been through, and then to put them through that is, I think it's cruel.
I do think
it's cruel.
And I agree with you. And the interesting part is what happens after the cameras are switched off, and there is such a disconnect between the parents and those two young women until they get back on a plane and return to Rwanda. Mm. And she says that it was awkward, almost uncomfortable.
As you know, it would be. I mean, that surely the kind... I mean, I love what Oprah does and I love the Oprah show, but surely the kindest thing to have done would have been to do that off camera.
Mm. Oh, it was a bit of a circus, wasn't it? I mean, it was very unfair to have done it. And look, and I think she says that that moment was, you know, the highs and lows from that moment, because she went on to be known as the Oprah girl. But also that the positivity of that was when they were trying to bring her parents back to the US, to emigrate to the US, and her father pulls out at the consulate in Rwanda an image of him with Oprah, and he's given a 10-year visa on the spot. It makes you question. It makes you question the motives and the motivation behind it.
Yeah.
But she's been able to go on from that, to work with Oprah, to also work with Holocaust survivors, to also work and also further her education, work with the UN, become an activist.
It's opened a lot of doors for her.
Absolutely.
There's no denying that. But I think that she puts the other side of the coin beautifully in the book. A lot of we see a lot of refugee camps described in the book. They flip from one to another. They're constantly on the move, and it's heartbreaking to read. Now, what was the personal experience that you wanted to share with us?
There was an experience where Claire, the older sister, I mean, you know, living in these refugee camps, you know, food is dropped. Well, whatever food is usually corn and beans are dropped in once a month, and that's all they have to eat. And she says that it takes about 7 hours to usually cook the corn and the beans. And she says that Claire's a meat eater. She absolutely loves meat, and she was craving meat. People were dying around them from malnutrition, hunger. And Claire sets out on foot. You know, she was 17 years old, sets out on foot in search of food. She leaves this refugee camp, and I think it was in Malawi, she finds a goat, and she brings that goat back. Now she remembers, she recalls that there are, you know, Muslims also in that refugee camp, so that she had to make sure that goat, so that the meat was distributed equally, that goat was slaughtered halal, and people then began to realize that they could leave the refugee camp. So Claire, with her strength, that inner strength, that young woman who I feel never really got to live her life, started something so unique. And, you know, that they started creating businesses within these refugee camps as
a
result.
A black market,
yeah,
going on.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, so they were swapping food. They were going out, bringing food in, and that the story of survival and initiated by a young 17-year-old who just could no longer see, you know, the death around her.
Yeah, one thing that really struck me was exactly what you mentioned, that Claire never really got the opportunity to live her life. And so Clementine was about 6 years old when everything kicked off in Rwanda, and Claire was
about 16 years old, and Claire never really got the opportunity to have an education.
Yeah.
But she always said that she didn't care who you were, what you were, and even on the Oprah show, you probably, if you ever watch it, the look on her face, she didn't care who Oprah was. You were never better than anyone. We were all human beings. And that was her approach in life. And she was a survivor. And Clementine really does say that the reason they survived on so many occasions was because of Claire's, you know, thinking. I mean, even when Claire had young children, and she had three children by the age of 22, and it was Clementine who was raising her niece while Claire went out and tried to, you know, hunt for food, tried to gather resources for them to live. And it was just such a, when you talk about strength in women, you talk about not the physical but the mental strength to overcome such a horrific experience. And you can see it even throughout the book, where there is a slight resentment, because Clementine does go on to achieve, where Claire cleans houses, cleans hotels, is, you know, housing 8 or 9 people under her roof, is trying to feed a community.
And Clementine ends up at Yale.
Exactly. So the dream that perhaps Claire once had, Clementine is living it. And she, I think in the book she says that there's a disconnect between the sisters, and there's a discussion where I think Clementine says, you know, you're never there to support. And I think Claire says to her, because when you talk about the story, you always talk about I. And we were a we. And she said, Claire says that...
she said that she did feel alone.
Alone, yep. And I can still see that those words on that page. You know, she felt alone throughout the whole experience. While Clementine had her sister.
Well, she had to be a mother to her little sister. She had to get them through that. You can't even begin to imagine the pressure of that as a child.
And the thing was that she was responsible. From that moment when they fled, their you know, it was down to Claire that they survived or not. And, you know, huge pressure on her. And she just had to get through each day. She had to make sure that they didn't starve, that, you know, that they wouldn't, not killed. And I think that I don't think that Clementine really would ever have appreciated what sacrifices her sister made.
Or even truly understood.
Yes. Truly I meant it in the way that she couldn't have ever appreciated what a struggle and how much she had to sacrifice, how much Claire had to sacrifice to become, you know, to make sure that they survived as a unit, plus, you know, having children as well, and all of that on her must have, you know, I wonder how you ever recover from that. I mean, the scars. I mean, and there have been across the world, across history, millions and millions and countless numbers of refugees for one reason or another. And to have the security of growing up in your own home country without any threats, which in a way is taken for granted, and yet for millions that's not the case. And I think that is something that I think this book Clementine's written does a wonderful job of bringing so vividly and uncomfortably to life in this book.
And one thing she says is that she just wanted people to see her, to recognise that she was a human being, and being displaced, she was a nobody. And she recalls a story in 1999 after escaping the war in Congo, and they were stuck in Mozambique, and Mozambique weren't taking any more refugees. They'd reached the border and they weren't taking any more refugees. So they hopped on the back of a truck. So there was her three-year-old niece and 6-month-old nephew, and they were dropped in a market in Zambia, and that was chaos. And the chaos in that market, and she sat there and she was ashamed of being a refugee, being stateless, a young girl trapped. And while her sister, once again, Claire, leaving Clementine with the children, while she went out to look for resources. And for 3 hours, she says, she sat there and no one helping her. The kids were crying. And then a woman came towards her and bought her a banana and water. And she said, in that moment, my life changed. And she said, I looked up at her and said, thank you. Now, in this experience, Clementine has gone through 7 or 8 countries and learned 5 languages. And she looked up and she said, she saw me, she raised me, and I will never forget that moment. And she gives so many talks around the world about her experience, and she says to people, this is an example of hope. So when you do see someone, recognize them, because that's really sometimes all they want, that they are a human being, that this situation can happen to anybody.
Yeah, that's a question that's often asked of Clementine in interviews as well. You know, why did you write the book? And it's always because I had an experience that I needed the world to hear. And if you read the book as well, you realise how long that the physical writing of it. So she obviously had to collaborate with Elizabeth Veal on the writing of the book. But when she says that she wants to apply to places like Princeton and Yale, when she's figuring out universities to go to, etc., they actually tell her you're aiming way too high initially. And then when she finally gets in, they say, yes, but I think you're going to struggle with the language. You need to take all these classes and build up your English, et cetera, et cetera. So the journey that she's gone on to be able to produce this book and tell this story and for it to be in front of us and for us to read that experience is a journey in itself as well. The amount of, you know, what she's gone through is just incredible.
No, I definitely agree with you. And I don't think, I think we've... When I was reading it, and all I could think of, you know, as a mother of four children, the heartache, the heartbreak, the tears flowing, how a child could be just left alone. I mean, there was a moment where, you know, Claire almost dies in a refugee camp, and she sits and she says, I'm only 6 years old, what am I going to do? She can't die. And she relies on her neighbours to help, you know, to pull them through. And there's also stories of simple things like lice, living every single day with lice in their blankets, in their hair, going out and as a six-year-old going to a river and learning how to wash blankets and how to burn the lice out of blankets. These are, imagine a six-year-old today having to ever experience something like that. And let's not forget that this didn't happen too long ago. This was, you know...
That's the scariest thing when you read it is you see a timeline at the top of the page and it tells you the year that each event is happening. And you find yourself looking up as you read the book going, I cannot believe that it was this recent.
And I clearly remember, you know, Rwanda. I clearly remember the African tragedies that happened throughout the 90s. And when I was working as a journalist in Australia, I was very fortunate enough to meet refugees from the Sierra Leone community who also experienced something very similar. Their tales, mothers sharing the stories of their sons being taken to become, you know, child soldiers. These are real human beings who were welcomed into new countries and allowed to, you know, to live their lives and to go on. But the stories that came out of their experiences, and also, you know, just in 2006, I remember writing a story about, you know, 14 athletes who arrived at the Commonwealth Games and in Melbourne and then disappeared, and there was a manhunt throughout Australia looking for them. And these Sierra Leone athletes were eventually found and they were seeking asylum in Australia because their lives were in danger. So 10 of them were eventually given visas to live in Australia. And just escaping, just hearing their stories and sitting down with them and never really being able to comprehend the tragedy and the heartache and what they had seen.
Yeah.
There's just so much more to hear.
Download our podcasts at DubaiEye1038.com.